John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. The Moth Main Stage comes to Turner Ballroom in Milwaukee on Wednesday, that's tomorrow, for a night of storytelling in Eyewitness, The Moth in Milwaukee. The night will focus on stories that explore truth in the eyes of the beholder, including epic battles, tough choices, false accusations, and redemption. This afternoon, members of The Moth join the Kathleen Dunn Show to talk about the importance of storytelling. And we'll have some stories of their own, and we'll have some other stories to play. So it should be a very interesting hour. Let me introduce our guests. We have three of them. Dan Kennedy is with us. Dan is the host of The Moth radio program. Dan, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Hi, how are you doing?
And Meg Bowles, who is producer of The Moth. Meg, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Hi, thanks very much.
And John McGivern, who is a local actor and a storyteller. John, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thanks, Jim.
So let's start, Dan Kennedy, with you. Tell us how The Moth got started and its evolution to what it's become today.
Well, you know, our founder, George Dawes Green, started The Moth 17 years ago in New York. But before that, he started it on St. Simon's Island off the coast of Georgia. And it was basically just a night when his friends and he would gather on a porch and tell stories. And there was a little hole in the screen on the porch, and moths would get in and get attracted to the light. So they kind of called their little group of friends The Moths. And then when George moved up to New York and started experiencing success as a novelist and a screenwriter, you know, no matter how successful you are in New York, the living rooms are small. And everybody couldn't fit in George's apartment. So he started having these events in small bars and cafes and stuff like that. And they just grew and grew and grew. I think the first main stage show I did, I told a story, and there was, I think, probably 75 people in the crowd, and I just thought, oh my gosh, this is huge. And of course, now we go all over the country and all over the world and play places like Turner Hall.
Well, Meg Bowles, I want to bring you in here because you're one of the people who's responsible for identifying storytellers for the Moth stage, people that people in Milwaukee will get to see tomorrow night. So tell us, what is it that makes a good story, and how does a potential storyteller identify some personal experience worthy of sharing? What are the essential ingredients?
Well, usually we say that good stories at the Moth are big moments from your life, moments that changed you or affected the way that you see the world. And often really great stories are stories that can take the listener to a place that they would never ordinarily get to go. So the listener kind of gets to live vicariously through them. And usually the thing that connects you to the listener is the emotion that you feel within, you know, in that experience. Being able to impart that emotion is the thing that connects you to the listener.
Well, Dan Kennedy, let's. The Moth has become enormously celebrated and some would say revered. I mean, you have these big events all across the country. The Moth Radio Hour, which, by the way, airs on our network on Friday nights, it won a Peabody Award. What is it? Why do you think live storytelling has become so popular?
Well, I think the joke used to be, you know, George used to say it was just amazing to have 5 minutes or 10 minutes to speak uninterrupted in New York City. So, you know, that's why folks were willing to line up down the block to have a moment of speaking uninterrupted, because, of course, at a cocktail party or something in Manhattan, everyone's looking over your shoulder for the next person they should be saying hello to, etc. But really, I think it just comes down to, you know, The Moth has amazing directors, you know, like Meg Bowles and Maggie Sino and Sarah Austin Jeunesse. And it's got a lot of really talented people that are really passionate about stories and storytelling. And more importantly, why is it so successful? Because everyone is willing to get up and tell a true story and share a little piece of their lives. That's really why it's so successful. I like to say that being with the Moth is kind of like being in a band that has around 1 million members.
I guess, it almost seems counterintuitive because in our modern world, we have, you know, millions of distractions, and I don't think that's too much of an exaggeration. And we're going we're living at a very rapid pace. We have a tremendous amount of electronic stimulation. How is it that we can make this what is perhaps one of the oldest forms of communication that we have, storytelling, relevant, and why does it captivate us so much? Maybe is it because we have all these distractions? It's pleasurable to sit down and let somebody else talk?
I think so. I think you definitely, for a moment, you get to leave all of that outside and just concentrate on listening to someone else and listening to their experiences. And often I think that people in the audience or listeners of stories see themselves in the storytellers, see their own life experience in the storytellers, and there's a connection that's made, or there's empathy that's found, and it's a very powerful medium.
800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our discussion. We're talking about storytelling. The context for this is The Moth. There's a main stage event in Milwaukee tomorrow night, and we're going to talk about details of that in just a moment. 800-642-1234, where do you value storytelling? Is it something that happens at family gatherings? Is it something that you would enjoy doing? Would you like to stand up in front of a bunch of people you probably don't know and tell stories? How would you feel about that? And what stories might you tell if you had the chance? 800-642-1234. Email address is talk@wpr.org. And you can also reach the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show there and leave your story, if you will. And obviously, since this is only an hour-long radio program, we'll need to be brief. My guests, Dan Kennedy, Meg Bowles, and John McGivern, will be here throughout the hour to talk about stories. Let's talk specifically about tomorrow evening's event in Milwaukee. Dan Kennedy, it's called The Moth Main Stage. I understand it's more of a curated group of storytellers. Is that right?
Well, yeah. Meg can really speak more to this point as director of the show. But we have two types of events at the Moth. We have our Story Slam series, which is an open mic, competitive in the funnest sense of the word, evening where anyone can walk in from the street and put their name in the hat and have a chance to get up on stage. And then we have our main stage events, which are a much more curated event, and Meg can really give you some great insight to that because she works with all the storytellers that you're going to see tomorrow night.
Okay, Meg, tell us about the storytellers that will be on the stage tomorrow. How were they selected?
Well, storytellers come to us for many different ways. You know, there's a story slam here in Milwaukee that happens the first Thursday of every month, and it's hosted by Christy Hall Watson, who's a local comic. And we in New York will listen to all of the audio that comes in from all of our slam stages across the country. And sometimes you'll hear a story that really moves you. And that was the case with Abbas Musa, who is one of the storytellers. He first told the story that he's telling. Well, the story he's telling tomorrow night is an expanded version of a 5-minute slam story that he told here live. And then, you know, I try to research the local, you know, locally in every city we go to, and coming to Milwaukee, would read and find out different things about people and things that are popular here or part of the culture here. And that's how I met John McGivern. He was recommended highly by several local people here. And then there's also Molly Schneider, who tells stories with there's another local storytelling group here called Ex Fabula, which she's very active in. And so she's a local storyteller that was also recommended. So it's a lot of word of mouth. And then when you get on the phone and you talk to people about their stories and what that theme might mean for them or how it resonates or even just having an initial conversation about those moments in their life that impacted them or change them in some way. And that's generally the starting point for kind of honing in and focusing in on what 10-minute story they might tell.
What makes a good story?
You know, there are a lot of things, but, you know, a, an arc, a natural arc, but really I think the key is that a story has to have stakes, you know, and you have to have everything to lose or everything to gain. It doesn't have to be life or death kind of stakes. It can be, you know, it can be small, but I think that's the thing. You have to know what that, why that story is important to the teller, and this, so that the listener knows why the story is important to hear.
Mm-hmm. Doris Lessing talks about the template of our stories, a beginning, a middle, and an end, kind of like he or she was born, lived, and died. That's the structure that our minds hold, and that would be that arc that you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. I often tell storytellers to really know what that first line is that, and that last line is, you know, because then they start strong, and as they're telling their story, you know, the stories aren't memorized. They're being told in the way that you would tell a story at a dinner party, to create that intimacy. It's not a performance. You're sharing, and so knowing that last line that kind of arcs the whole story back is your landing point.
Well, we have a couple of examples that I think we should play one of them right now to kind of give us an idea of the story and what it. How it works. I think we'll start with the Alexandra Rosas story. That's one. The theme at that particular story gathering was a fish out of water, and Meg,
you want to set this up for us? Yeah, sure. She told it at Turner Hall back in 2014. It was our first Grand Slam here in Milwaukee, and what that is our slam stages. After 10 winners, after 10 slams, the 10 winners come together and they perform in a Grand Slam where they compete to be Grand Slam champion. And so on this particular evening, Alexandra told this story and she won the Grand Slam.
I'm always afraid I'm going to forget something important, so I write everything down, including what we do every Christmas. I was reading what I wrote down from last year. We had picked up my mother early to spend the day with us, and I had the house decorated in all these little white lights, and I had made my mom special coffee. And she was sitting having her coffee, and she's Colombian, and she says, "I don't know what you do to make this coffee so delicious, but it's the best coffee in the world." And what my mother doesn't know is that her coffee is so delicious because I add a quarter cup of Bailey's to it. So she sips and she chats and she sips some more and she says, "Have those lights always looked so pretty?" Now, I have three children, but it's my youngest, Augie, who is my mom's best friend. Last Christmas, he gave her this little plastic black and white cow. And this cow, you squeeze its udders. And we had seen it on the Ellen show. So you squeeze its udders, and it spits out these red and green balls. So my mom and my son spend the entire day having this cow spit balls at my butt every time I bend over. Now, this special coffee makes this really funny. So it goes on over and over. So I'm driving my mom home last year after she's been with us all day long. And she doesn't know what is happening with her day. She was diagnosed with dementia about 8 years ago, and she's trying to decide the best part of her day. Whether it was the coffee, whether it was the cow. She really liked the cow. She doesn't know. And we're laughing and we're talking, and then things get quiet, like loud quiet. And I can feel my mother staring at the side of my face, and I can't stand the tension anymore. So I ask her, "Mama, what is it? Is there something you want to say?" And she says just one stark sentence: "Promise me that next year you'll have something under the tree for the little one." Now, everything wrong rushes out of my mouth because she's scaring me. I say, don't talk that way. Why are you saying those things? Don't say that. You'll be with us. But my mother has never asked me for anything in my life. So I promise her, yes, Mama, there will be something from you for Augie under the tree next year. So we go shopping, and she picks out a present for Augie, and she picks out the silver paper to wrap it in, and on the gift tag, she writes, for Augie, love, Nona, and her letter L is this beautiful loop. And I take the present to the basement so that she can give it to him next year. So a few weeks before Christmas this year, I go to the basement and I bring up all the presents that I've hidden all over the house. And I bring them up and I bring up my box of ribbons and bows and paper and scissors. And I go to the refrigerator and I get a bottle of beer because if I'm going to be rapping all night, I'm going to do it Wisconsin style. So I have everything set up and it's about 1 a.m. and then I see it. It's the present that my mother bought for my son. And I don't know what to do with myself because I don't have a mother anymore. And I remember the promise I made to her, but the thought of this gift under the tree is too much. And if I start crying, I won't stop. And ever since my mother dies, our entire household has had to work to make sure and pretend that everything is okay for Augie. He cries. He misses her. He says, it's hard, Mama. And I know this. But still, I think of that promise I made for my mother. I wrap the gift and I walk to the tree to put it underneath with the other presents. But then I stop. No. I put it back in the box with the wrapping paper and everything and I carry it down to the basement. Well, Christmas comes this year and we go to church and we have dinner and we open the presents and we're getting down to the last few and I get this feeling that I have one chance to either do things really right or really wrong. So I go down to the basement and I look for that silver gift and I bring it upstairs. And I don't know where my allegiance lies. Is it with my mother? Is it with my son? And I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I mean, I made this promise to my mother, but my son hasn't cried for a good solid 4 weeks about his grandmother. I come back upstairs and I say, there's still one more gift. Everybody turns around and looks at me. I look at the tag and I see the swirly letter L of my mother's writing. I begin to read, for Augie. But I can't finish because I don't know how to do this without her. So I bury my face in my hands and my son rushes over. I have made a huge mistake. He looks at the gift. He looks at the tag. When he sees it, his face breaks out into this big smile, and he reads, for Augie, love, Nona. Thank you.
A moving story. We need to go to a break. We'll do that. But when we come back, I want to hear what it was that made that story work. And we'll talk about that, and we'll hear more stories. We're talking about storytelling today. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about storytelling, and just before we went to that break, we heard a very moving story about a family situation and what happened at a Christmas celebration. Meg Bowles, what made that story work?
You know, I think there are several things. Alexandra has this really beautiful way of painting details that really allow you to see the story that you're hearing. You know, the lovely swoop of the L in the love, Nona. You know, and she also has this gift. I think some stories, the stories where they take you on a range of emotion, starting with laughing and then being choked up a little and getting a chill at the end. You know, they really kind of take the listener through a whole roller coaster of emotion, so to speak. It's not just one note. And I think there's a complexity to that. And I think people want, you know, your earlier question about technology. And I think one of the fundamental things is people want to connect. They want to feel these emotions. And when a story makes you feel something, I think it's really successful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about some tips that you actually do storytelling workshops, and you give people information on your website about what makes a good story. Let's talk about a few of those tips. So, for example, moth stories are told, not read. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you want to share a story. You don't want to stand up and recite a story, because then you run the risk of standing on stage and remembering your words and not remembering the moment. And the more that you can stay in the memory of that moment, the more it translates into your telling, because you remember what it felt like and you can hear it in the words that you say just from your own, you know, drawing on that memory.
Well, the cadence of reading and the cadence of telling are usually two different things also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always say to people that, you know, when you perform or you recite, that your audience is, they critique you. It's like a theater critic. They sit there and they're like, oh, he did that well, or he didn't do that well. But when you get up and you share a story and you're vulnerable and you talk about your emotions, then people lean in and they want you to do well and they lift you up. That critical aspect is gone.
Made the point earlier that stories need to have stakes. Mm-hmm. You have to have skin in the game. And then perhaps the one thing that most of us overlook, we think a lot about, well, how do I get into my story? But then sometimes we get lost trying to find the ending, and it ends up sounding like a Mozart symphony with with about a half a dozen false endings. How do we overcome that?
Yeah, I always say to people, know your ending, know that last line. That's the one thing you can memorize, because then it's like a dismount. You know, it's your landing. You can see it coming, and you can work your way to it. Because if you don't know your ending, you tend to circle it and say it in a variety of ways, and mm-hmm. you know, you'll do your ending three times. But I also
go ahead.
I was going to say the other tip is to really stay in the action and stay in the moment when you're telling the story. Don't jump ahead and tell us how it ended before you take us through the journey of it.
Yeah, don't give away the ending. Give people a chance to or a reason to keep listening to you.
Right,
John McGivern, I want to bring you in on this as well. You have an extensive background in theater. The story tips that you just heard from Meg, are those true for acting on the stage as well?
It's interesting because Meg and I went through my story over the phone. And to rehearse over the phone is a whole different sort of experience for me. I'm known for my one-man shows as well, where I have produced pieces, and there's a thread that lasts an hour and a half, and I was told that I wouldn't have an hour and a half, that I would have 10 minutes. And so when we did my story the first time, Meg listened and was incredibly kind and supportive, and then I got the email of 4 pages of notes, which were incredible. No, lovely notes that I our next conversation was I wanted to talk about her directing, and because they were, again, the notes were incredibly kind, because what happens is that this is bare bones. I am standing in front of a mic and a mic stand, and my relationship to the audience is based on my story, not how my story is produced, not the underscore of music, not how the lights come up. This is me and my story, and I had to really kind of take it back a little bit and not be the performer, not be the stand-up comedian that people know me to be, not be the actor, you know, just to be bare bones honest. And I'm thrilled to be part of it. So
Well, tell us a little bit about the story that you're going to share tomorrow on stage. Will it feel different than what you typically perform?
It will. It will. There's a part of it that's so really current. It's a story that I found shooting. You know, I have a show called Around the Corner with John McGivern on PBS that I found it while I was shooting up in Hayward, Wisconsin. And I talk a little bit about if people don't know Hayward, which you obviously do since you are even further north than
I went
Hayward.
To high school there, so oh, Hayward is kind of my home. My mother still lives there, and she's a great storyteller.
I will tell people that if they don't know Hayward, they just need to drive north, and once they think they're in Canada, just presume they're in Hayward. I mean, yeah. it's just a little far north. So I tell a story that I found in the middle of shooting in the middle of the woods, and it's I'm thrilled to tell it and in front of an audience and not just over the phone with Meg. You know, it should be great. So.
Okay. All right. Well, we have some callers who want to join us. I'd like to take those calls. Let's go to Eugene in Viola first. Eugene, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for taking my call. My mother ran a restaurant in a small village here about 60 years ago. And people would come in the restaurant and tell a story of some incident or something that happened during the day. Their timing and their pauses and their punchlines, they were just, as far as I was concerned, were just magnificent. But everybody was telling stories all the time of something that happened during the day. They'd put their pauses and timings in there and just do an excellent job. I can tell a story, but I couldn't hold a candle to that generation.
So, are you saying, Eugene, that you think we've lost the knack for storytelling?
I think so, a little bit. I have a brother living in Reedsburg, and we both agree none of us, we don't hear the stories anymore, be they good or not, pretty much. I mean, I can tell a story. I'm a sutler at Civil War reenactments, and I can tell a story of something that happened when I was teaching many years ago, and I take my time, and I'm into the story. Pretty much. I don't rush it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dan, Meg, John, are we losing in our culture? Are we losing our storytelling capabilities in favor of other perhaps quicker, more immediate reward forms of communication?
I feel like, you know, Twitter and these things, you know, I suppose if you used to go into a wonderful little cafe or restaurant and meet up with folks from your community and be excited to tell them a story about something they wouldn't believe that happened that day, I kind of think there are a lot of folks now who just write 141 characters with spaces about it and tweet it in the parking lot and then go in and have their lunch. You know, I mean, that's the one thing I love about The Moth, kind of bringing this back to the forefront, because it's always been there. It's certainly not something that anyone invented. It's been around since the dawn of time. And, you know, I think we have gotten away from it. And, you know, I'm on Twitter. I like Twitter and Instagram. I love to post pictures from shows and stuff like that. But at the same time, if you're on social media for more than about 5 or 10 minutes, you'll notice that something called social media is actually a pretty lonely place to hang out.
Yeah, well, there don't seem to be any real people there. There are just avatars.
Yeah, yeah.
Meg Bowles, what do you think? Are we losing our ability to tell stories, and how do we get it back if that's true?
Well, I think that it's kind of the success of The Moth shows that people crave it. You know, I mean, we go to shows all over the country, and you know, we have venues that are 300 people or 3,000 people, and they sell out quickly. And it's pretty incredible that many people mm-hmm. want to come and just, you know. We have these big theaters where the only thing on the stage is a microphone. That's it. And a spotlight and a timekeeper. And that's it. And all it is, it's just about the story and the person telling it. Hmm. And yet people come and they want to hear it.
And Jim, those are people who want to listen to the story, and those people who want to tell the stories. You know, I spend all summer shooting this show, and I'm a facilitator of people's stories. And I am telling you, all you have to do is ask. All you have to do is begin a conversation about somebody's past or about somebody's day, and they want to talk. They want to tell you.
There's this moment too where when we listen to Alexandra's story a little bit earlier in the show. There was this moment that swept over the studio here that I think we all might have noticed, and that right there is why I think folks crave the connection of storytelling. You know, before we listened to that story, we were all sitting in here, and it was
perfectly polite and fine, and we were hitting it off just fine and everything, and everyone was enjoying their water and getting ready to, you know, talk and hang out. And then we listened to that story, and there were these moments in Alexandra's story where our eyes were meeting here across the mixing board. We were like smiling at a joke or laughing at a thing or identifying with a part of the painful aspect of loved ones aging and things like that. And from that moment forward, I just felt everything in this room change. And that's, I think, the connection that folks crave. That's just the transformative moment where all of a sudden everything in the room is different.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Madison, and Stephanie is with us. Stephanie, hello.
Hi there. This is really a treat. I love The Moth, and I was telling the screener that that's from one of my fantasies is to go on The Moth and tell a story. I know for me, one of the big things that's happened in my life is going from having very functional vision, even though it was a visual impairment, to being basically being blind and going blind. And I think my beginning line would be something like, I have survived what would have been my worst nightmare. I have faced it, and I'm living it, and it's not as bad and as dire as I thought it would be. And I'm glad I'm here. And there's all kinds of things that I've thought about, but I'm wondering. I don't right now. I'm working on getting technology so I can, you know, keyboard. I miss being able to read my handwriting because I love the physical act of writing. I love the physical act of reading, and I wanted to find out what if you encourage people to do things like just talking to a tape recorder, you know. As one way of doing it, to me, sometimes you tell a story and you find it's going to be about something totally different. And it's you're sharing from the heart. And I was thinking to myself last night, hey, I would love to be able to get up there and talk. We have to be able to learn to listen and not have, do what people like my mom, my late mom just passed away, would say, Get to the point, you know. People interrupt or they'll, oh, I know, you know, about that or blah, blah, blah. You know, that's where sometimes having circles, just having talking circles where you literally the person that holds the stick is the one that's talking. Or places like The Moth where you know, you're up there and you're telling the story and people are listening. It is such a wonderful experience. So anyway.
Okay. Stephanie, thanks for sharing that with us. One of the questions that arises here is how to make a pitch for a story that might eventually get on The Moth. And I know that you have a number of ways for people to interact with you, but if somebody wants to have a story considered, what do they have to do?
Well, we have two ways that you can join in, and you know, the slams, you're able to go and put your name in a hat for a chance to tell a 5-minute story, and you can go to our website and see if we have one in your area and when it happens. It's usually once a month, and they're structured around a theme, and we listen to all the audio, so it doesn't matter if you win the slam or not, we listen, and some of the best stories were not slam winners and end up on the radio. And others, sometimes we'll hear your story and want you to tell a 10-minute version of that story. And so we'll call you and say, let's talk more and see if we can expand it. The other way is our pitch line, which is a pretty amazing thing. On our website, you can click on tell a story and it'll take you on a step-by-step of how to pitch your own story to The Moth. And we listen to all of those as well. And we call people back and talk to them about their stories. But we listen to all of them.
We're talking about storytelling and The Moth, and there will be a moth main stage event tomorrow evening at the Turner Hall Ballroom in Milwaukee, and we have details of that, I believe, on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page or at WPR.org. We'll go through the details of that event tomorrow night before the end of the hour. So have a pen and pencil ready and write this down. Boy, there's some old school thinking. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have another story. I think when we come back, I'd like to hear, like us to listen to the Chris Myers story. We'll set that up when we come back. We have some more callers who want to join us. You could be one at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about storytelling. The Moth Main Stage comes to Turner Hall Ballroom in Milwaukee tomorrow night. It'll be in an evening of storytelling on Eyewitness, the Moth in Milwaukee. And we're talking about storytelling this hour. Dan Kennedy, host of the Moth radio program, Meg Bowles, producer of the Moth, and John McGivern, a local actor and storyteller who will be on stage tomorrow night, are all with me here today to talk about storytelling. One of the stories that we have audio for here is a story by Chris Myers. Meg, you want to set this up for us?
Sure. Chris told this this story back in 2014 at the Story Slam here in Milwaukee, and the theme for this evening was happy.
I'm okay with it. I was fine. In the run-up to my first daughter's birth, I discovered that the gulf between how I thought I should feel and how I did feel was getting wider and wider. It wasn't so much that I felt blue or sad or anything, it was just that it was a little bit beyond my reach. The good news was that, the reality is that in terms of my bundle of joy, I was getting a lot of bundle, not a lot of joy. So this came to a quick head as 2 weeks before she was born, my wife and I, late one evening, we're hanging out, she sits down and says, "Ooh." And it is the most significant "ooh" I'm ever going to hear in my life. Because we spend 3.5 hours trying to figure out if we're in labor. Now, I'm just going to tell you, if you're planning on having a kid or if you're on your way to having a kid, if you spend 3 hours, if you spend 2 hours trying to figure out if you're in labor, you're in labor. So we rush to the hospital, and about 45 minutes after that, I'm holding my daughter, Eleanor. And I'm relieved. I'm happy in a sense, but I'm not really feeling the joy. Still kind of beyond me. Well, luckily my wife steps in and she sends me to go get her some non-hospital food. And so I go across the street to Whole Foods, which is a bastion of drama. And there, in aisle, I think it was 7, I'm reaching for an Italian soda, and as I reach for it, I hear a drum beat on the radio. Dum, 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 dum. And a keyboard, and a baby's cry. And it's this throwaway song that I've never paid attention to, for the most part. But I fall to my knees sobbing, because it's Stevie freaking Wonder's "Isn't She Lovely?" And I am suddenly clobbered by the reality of what is hit, and, well, frankly, I'm floored. And as I'm having my epiphany, I'm sitting there, and I can hear in the back of my head this voice saying something to the effect of, "There's an incident in aisle 7. And I'm looking around thinking, I'm the only guy in aisle 7. There's nothing going on. Oh. Good parenthood moment, I'm going to mention, I didn't drop the bottle. Cradled, sobbing over my lemon lime Italian soda. I get this 19-year-old kid, he's kind of geeky looking, and comes up, very Whole Foods-y. And he's like, "Are you okay, sir?" And I'm cradling a bottle of Italian soda and trying to explain to him the beauty, the depth, the grapes of what 10 fingers and 10 toes is suddenly meaning to me. And I'm not doing a good job of it. And finally, I just settle for, I'm fine. I spend a lot of time at the floor of Whole Foods, aisle 7, cradling bottles of Italian soda. And he goes away. He's glad that I tell him I'm fine. But the problem is still in aisle 7.
So I rate a little bit higher, and I get the manager. And so I decide honesty is the best policy this time around. And as soon as he gets up there, I try and stand up. Standing up looks like you're in control. And so I turn to him, and I'm like, look, man, I just had my first daughter born not an hour ago across the street from here, and this song is playing. And he hasn't heard it. It's background noise to him. But suddenly he does, and his face is blank for a second, and then I am buried in man. And my shoulder's getting wet. And all he can sob out to me is, mine was born 3 months ago, too. And so it takes a blind man to show two grown men how to find the joy in their little bundles.
What a great story. What a great story that was. And those of us who have children probably can remember the moment that they were born and how we felt. So a lot of commonality there. But the audience just really loved that story. What did that say to us? Meg, let's start with you. And I want to hear from Dan and John as well. What made this story work for you?
You know, I think you hit it right there. I mean, a lot of us have had kids or know of people who, you know, have had nieces or, but just that complex emotion. Like, he was willing to tell on himself that he wasn't so happy in the beginning, you know, like everybody says that you're supposed to be so happy at the birth of your child, but he was looking for it. And there's an honesty in that, that, you know, often people don't share. And then his whole arc of his story is about finding that joy and really, and having that emotion hit him. And I think that's the thing you feel. I don't know about you, but I got chills.
Dan? Dan, how about you?
Yeah, the same thing. I mean, you know, I'm listening to a story like that, and I'm thinking, well, how many times have we all been to the grocery store? And that's a pretty huge number for most of us. And how many times have you hugged someone in the grocery store? And that number is real small. And again, that's the moment I'm in it for with storytelling, is just when you realize you're not alone on the planet. You know, you realize that, because if I walk down the street, everyone to me looks like they've got it together. They've got a game face on. They don't have half of the feelings I have. They're not struggling with half the things I'm struggling with, all that stuff. I'm the only person that didn't get the, you know, the operating manual to life, is how I feel. And then,
wait a minute, there's an operating manual? Wow.
And, you know, and then you see, you hear someone talk about a moment like that, and you realize, oh, cool, okay, so I'm fine, we're all here together. And that's just, I don't know, I can't put a value on that. It's just amazing.
I'm stuck on the operating manual because I'm 62 and I'm just now hearing this.
It's a PDF now, and they just tweet it.
I want a refund. Okay. John, do you want to add anything to this? Because we've got a caller I want to get to also, who I think would be really important to the discussion.
No, they did well. They did well. Okay. That whole all common right. sort of feeling is great. So.
Okay, let's go to Lake Zurich. Nice time of the year for that. And Sarah is on the line. Sarah, good afternoon.
Hi, John. Thank you so much. You know, I just wanted to let you know and to ask your guest that I used to like The Moth a lot, and then I got tired of it, and now I only listen to it when I really need, like, a feel-good story, because it seems to me that you started just picking stories that have happy endings, and a lot of times someone gets married at the end. And I just, you know, I just got sick of that, because that's not all of life. I mean, there's so many people who have stories that are important, and they learn something from, and they tell you something about life, but they don't have a happy ending. And so I want to ask you if you think I'm, you know, not being fair, and if I am being fair, like, why do you make those choices?
No, I think it's absolutely fair. I mean, I often say to a storyteller, you don't need to tie it up nicely in a bow. It doesn't have to be a happy ending necessarily. I think, you know, one of the stories tomorrow night Shannon Cason is kind of a good example of that, you know, that life continues on and it's not necessarily, you can't necessarily put a fine point on it. So I do agree that often you do see a lot of stories that do have some sort of resolution, because there is something satisfying in having a resolution to a story. But, you know, I agree that not always is it a happy ending. And I do think that we have stories like that. I just don't think they're as frequent, to your point.
Well, and maybe we feel better sharing the stories with a happy ending with others. Maybe it's kind of an upper Midwestern thing to not want to share bad news. I don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, you know, there's a process. You know, I worked with a young man who, when he was a young boy, he accidentally shot his best friend and killed him. You know, and his story was about really struggling with the aftermath of that even into his adulthood. And, you know, he did, at the end of the story, there is a resolution for himself. It's not by any means a happy ending. And I think you find stories like that often where the subject matter is hard, and it's really about the process of figuring out how to live your life after the fact, after the story.
Yeah. I spoke about finding my therapist dead. That was the last session of therapy I had, and that's a story at the Moth. And, you know, I think to Meg's point, there's a bit of resolution in having feelings the way he taught me that I can have some feelings, and there's definitely resolution at the end of that story that way. But you know what, that was 14 years ago that he passed away and that I found him when I showed up for my session. And still every Friday night, I miss him. Mm-hmm. I mean, every Friday night, like clockwork at 6:30, I still miss that person. So, you know, sometimes there's a bit of resolution in the storyteller's voice at the end of the story, but I think we can all infer that life continues to happen.
Well, is part of that then the opportunity to share our pain with others? I mean, as a way of achieving something for ourselves, being able to spread it around a little bit?
I do think that telling your story is a very powerful thing. You know, I worked with a gentleman who was in Reactor 1 at Fukushima when the earthquake happened. He was working in the power plant. And for him, before he told his story, he was suffering terribly from PTSD. He was not working. He was very depressed. He hadn't celebrated Christmas since it had happened. And the act of working on the story with me and going through the memories of it and articulating it and then standing in front of a crowd of 1,000 people and feeling the love of that crowd as he told that story. And not only did he take the people in that room to that place that they had heard about on the news and seen pictures of, he took them to the epicenter of it. And then... But he also had an opportunity to explain what that experience was like for him, and he was changed. It was amazing. You know, in the years since he told that story, he's gone on to get a new job, and he just bought a boat. And he's like he's, I don't know. It's there was something healing in going through the process of telling the story and having people hear him and hear mm-hmm. his experience, that he didn't feel so lonely anymore.
Hmm. I want to make sure that we talk about the specifics of what's going to happen tomorrow night and where people can find out more about it. The Eyewitness, the Moth in Milwaukee is tomorrow at 7:30. Doors open at 6:30 at Turner Hall, which is located at 1040 North 4th Street in Milwaukee. You can find out, we have a link on the show note, which is on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page, or you can go to www.etix.com. We're kind of about out of time. Thank you, all three of you, for telling your stories and for sharing about storytelling with us today. It's been a really great hour.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
Dan Kennedy, host of the Moth radio program, Meg Bowles, producer of the Moth, John McGivern, local actor and storyteller, have all been my guests this hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show. Kathleen will be back tomorrow. Scott Myers produced this hour of programming. KP Whaley handled on-air production, and we also had technical assistance from Michelle Good. Again, that story event tomorrow night, The Moth in Milwaukee, tomorrow night at 7:30. Doors open at 6:30. It's at Turner Hall. And you can find out about tickets at the Pabst box office or go to our website, and you can find out all about it on the Kathleen Dunn Show page and on Facebook as well. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stick around. Central Time comes up next.